husband. What's going on?
I just got home from a gig.
Oh, yeah? What gig is that?
A belly dancing gig, not a music gig.
Oh, well, hey, it's still music, you know?
Yeah.
You know? And that's,
yeah.
I got to tell you this, and I love the Screaming Sirens. You guys are so cute. You really were, and I loved, Maniac and all that. In fact, first time I ever heard the Screaming Sirens was on the Enigma Variations that I bought back when I was in high school. God,
oh, yeah.
Back in the day. I always hate that. Back in the day. Anyway. But
oh my God, I have to tell. I'll tell you a story about that. When that record came out, everyone that was on it went over to Ron Gowdy's house, one of the guys from Enigma, and they were already talking about making an album with us, and I think Tex and the Horseheads had just come out. But everyone that was on it, TSOL, Tex and the Horseheads, and the Screaming Sirens, we were all like really good friends, but really super insane, like party nightmare friends, you know? And his house got, and the Joneses too, his house got so trashed that night. We were all like, well, we're going to get kicked off the label. We all thought, like, we're never going to record for this label again.
You know, Rod Gowdy's actually a good friend of mine, and he...
Yeah, me too.
I love that guy, and man, I was a huge fan, still am, of Modern Warfare, and do you know that I traded with a friend of mine, and the first time I ever heard Modern Warfare was a 7-inch, and it was so DIY, the white label part, whoever had put the record out wrote with a blue ink pen the titles of the song. And I just remember being blown away by No Passion, that song No Passion. And I was like, whoa, man, this is so cool. And, of course, years later, here we are, fast forward to the 2000s. And, Ron Gowdy's a guy that I'll, hey, so Ron, what do you think? I'm doing Stench Radio. What do you think? What direction should I? He kind of mentors me, actually. So, he's a wonderful guy. I love him.
Yeah, I always love him too. I sent him a story right before Showgirl Confidential came out. There's a crazy story in there about the Screaming Sirens on tour and Poison 13 and Tex and the Horseheads.
Oh, I love Poison 13.
I know. We used to stay with them all the time when we came to Austin. But so I sent the story to Ron Gowdy, and he was just like, "Oh my God, I didn't know you guys were doing stuff like that." I was like, "What are you fucking kidding me?"
Oh, we nobody heard them, but you and I were just talking on the phone, and I had not spoken to you since 87 at the Scream Club. And down, this is the one off of what was it, off of Figueroa, I think.
Yeah, that was a great club. Oh, my God.
I loved it, man. And it was right up the street from the LA Variety Arts Center. I remember going to see X.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. The Butthole Surfers play at LA Variety Arts.
Oh, I saw that show. That show was nuts.
Wasn't it gnarly? And let's see, DC3 played, and Firehose. Remember that?
Yeah, and like half the audience was like tripping their brains out, and I was one of them.
Oh, my God. I was so trashed at that show. Oh, my word. I was just...
That show was epic. That was a total, like, standout show in a time of many standout shows.
Oh man, Locust Abortion Technician, that was the name of the Butthole. To this day, Pleasant, that is like my favorite Butthole Surfers record.
That's a great record.
Oh man, but anyways, I remember seeing you guys play, and I was like, whoa. I might be totally wrong, but I want to say Blood on the Saddle was playing that night as well with you guys. I think so.
I think they were too.
And it was just so cool. And Texacala, it was either you guys or Blood on the Saddle that she got on stage and did a song with.
I don't remember, but it might have been us. We used to do stuff like that all the time. I just found out today. today, this afternoon, that the Screaming Sirens had a Wikipedia page. I didn't even know that. I have no idea who made it. I put it on Facebook with all the, you know, the girls from the Sirens tagged, and I was like, do you know who did this? And no one knew. None of us knew. It was crazy.
Well, you know, see, I can believe that, because Screaming Sirens, of, you know, you guys were part of that whole, I hate calling it cowpunk, but to me it was...
Yeah, I
like,
did too, but I, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah, but, you know, to me it was kind of like country and blues-infused punk rock. I mean, that was just... I hate labels, really, to be honest with you, but, I mean, you guys, and Tech, of course, Tex and the Horseheads, Gun Club, all that whole, you know, really, you know, to me, you know, I can believe Scream, but, you know, this girl I'm kind of seeing right now, she goes, oh, you know, and she was telling me this stuff, like, that I hadn't told her yet. And she was, I was like, whoa, how did you, well, I read it off your Wikipedia page. I'm like, what? I'm like, what? You see, me having a Wikipedia page, that surprises me, because I'm not like, you know, I wasn't, you know, that whole part of music history was just awesome. You know, X and the Blasters and Tex and the Horseheads, Gun Club, plus, you know, Screaming Sirens, and you mentioned the Joneses. I remember seeing those guys, and I was like, whoa, these guys party, man. You know they do.
Oh, yeah, we used to play with them all the time. Everyone that you mentioned, we played with constantly, and the partying was psychotic. It really was. It was, I mean, it was great, but it would be like 3-day-long parties.
Oh, man. And, you know, Texicala is still going. She is still... I play harmonica with her on occasions, you know, when she does, you know, it's just when she's doing just her acoustic thing. And, dude, her voice is still just as insane, amazing as ever. And it's really cool hearing her, you know, tell some of those cool Jeffrey Lee Pierce stories. And, you know, I never...
Oh, yeah, because he was the one that got me... and Tex to have bands. It was all Jeffrey Lee Pierce's fault.
Well, he was kind of, you know, that's what she was telling me. It's like, he was kind of the apostle of that whole, he was kind of like the apostle Peter of that whole thing, you know?
And you know, I'll tell you the defining moment of all of that. This is so crazy, and it's so, like, of the time. We were all at some theater on Hollywood Boulevard to see E.T. right when it came out. And we were all sitting in a big cluster. And Jeffrey goes, you need a band. You got to have a band. And then he's like, I just hooked Tex up with Mike Martin. They're going to have a band called Tex and the Horsehead. So me and you should have a band. And we had a band. It was me and Jeffrey Pierce and Brad Dunning, who played in the original Gun Club. And this other guy, John, that on bass, that I didn't know what happened, but it was to him. But it was called the Cyclones, and we played one time, and it was at Gazzari's opening for Black Flag.
Holy shitballs, man! I bet that was insane.
That was totally insane, and it was even more insane because, like, me and the drummer had been kind of seeing each other. And we got in this big fight on stage, and then Jeffrey started, like, punching people in the audience and shit. And then Black Flag wanted us to play with them again because, I mean, like, all our equipment just got, you know, like, tossed around and broken. And, I mean, but it was a real fight, you know what I mean? And I think some of the people in the audience thought it was just, like, you know, punk rock theater.
Wow.
But so that was the one gig of the Cyclones with me as the singer and Jeffrey as the guitar player and two other guys. But then after that, like right after that, then I was like, I'm going to start a band of my own. So I started the Screaming Sirens.
Well, I just remember you guys were just insane. I loved it. It was just these crazy girls doing this crazy music, and it was beautiful, man. I just loved it, and the energy was just, you just, see, to me, that's, you can never recreate that. I mean, that's just something that when the stars and the moon aligns and, you know, the energy is just raw and it's real, and it, you can never, you just can't bottle and make it. You can't, it's something that's just, you just can't force. It just, some corporate company cannot make. It's just, it was that whole time period, you know, it was, you know, everybody was, you know, the whole LA punk rock thing was kind of, I hate using the word dying out, but people were kind of like, okay, you know, we're ready for something new, you know. And that, when that whole, you know, Jeffrey Lee came out and he just really, you know, like, hey, fuck everybody, this is what we're going to do now. And it was just awesome. Keith Morris,
yeah.
You mentioned Keith Morris in the message you sent me, and I've had him on a bunch of times. Anytime I have him on, I always bring Tex on because it's so cool listening to those two talk. And, you know, they both have, you know, a history with Jeffrey Lee. And of course, you know, Keith wrote a song about him, you know.
Yeah.
And that is just awesome. And he looks so good now, man. Keith looks just great now. And it's just so, I just kind of wish that, you know, I kind of, you know, if Jeffrey Lee was still alive, what would it
be? So do I.
Yeah, I bet he would just, wow. I bet, because he really was the spark of all that, you know?
Yeah, he started all of that. You know, the Gun Club's last show was at, me and Iris Berry had a band called the Ringling Sisters, and we used to put on these big Christmas benefits at, it's now called the Avalon, but it used to be called the Palace in Hollywood. And, like, that was the last Gun Club show. And then he died, like, less than a month after they played there. It was a good show. But that was, like, you know, the last show. It was towards the end. But, yeah, he, you know how we met, me and Jeffrey? He was, I don't know if you even know this, he was the president of the Blondie fan club.
Yes, I did know that.
And we met at the Tropicana Motel when Blondie came to town for the first time. It was me and Joan Jett and Randy Kay, who's also not with us any longer, and Randy and I used to do the magazine Lobotomy. And Jeffrey was there in the parking lot, and we all were hanging out and playing records and interviewing. Well, I was interviewing Blondie for my fanzine Lobotomy, and that was like how I actually formally met Jeffrey.
Wow. See, I love these kind of stories. I mean, this is just what I loved, you know, people like you that come on and have these amazing pieces of just priceless history. And you know, this is moments like this is what I really, why I started doing this. You know, I had kind of given up and thought, man, radio is just not for me anymore. And I started this.
Oh, channel. I know.
And it's just like I'm that kid all over again, you know. And, you know, I was talking to Chuck Dugalski, who was in Black Flag a while back, and he and I were talking about how, you know, record stores back in those days, and he explained to me why it was this way. But if you remember finding the real cool, gnarly underground punk rock records, you had to go in the import section.
We had to sometimes you had to, like, special order them. You'd get the record store to special order them because they wouldn't even be stocking, like, the UK punk stuff. I mean, they could get it if you told them what it was. But some of the stores, even if they had a UK section, they wouldn't have, like, you know, the singles. Like, they wouldn't have the adverts or the Damned or something, you know. I remember that even the first time I heard Sheena Is a Punk Rocker on American radio, I pulled the car over, and we just had a blasting, and we were dying. We were, like, sitting there looking at the radio like it was, like, you know, like a big statue of God.
Because we were
hearing it on the radio, you know?
Well, you know, what was really cool is earlier, excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that, man. It's getting to that witching hour, man. I got to get my second wind, but we just had Cheetah Chrome. I just had Cheetah Chrome on earlier, and it's just kind of surreal. I'm sitting here talking to Cheetah Chrome, and you know, from the Dead Boys, and I was that kid, Pleasant, that, you know, back in the late 70s, you know, I was like, okay, rock and roll all night, party every day. Okay, that's cool. Welcome to my nightmare. Okay, this is cool. And is this it? Is this all rock and roll has for me? And, man, when the Ramones came, oh, wow. And then the Pistols. But, man, when I opened up this magazine and I saw this band called the Dead Boys, and they just, you could just look. I never heard their music yet, but I could look at them, Pleasant. When I saw,
you know what? I was just talking about exactly that thing today with someone, not about the Dead Boys, but I was talking about how you could look at a postage stamp sized photo in like Sounds or NME or New York Rocker or something and just know that it was like the best thing on earth before you even heard it. You know?
Oh yeah.
Like just like I wanted to hear a record from Susie Sue, like before there was even Susie and the Banshees, just because, like, there was always pictures of, like, you know, the Bromley contingent or her with the Sex Pistols, and I'd be like, who is this person? This person is amazing.
But, you know, when I laid eyes on Cheetah Chrome, you know, picture of Cheetah Chrome is this radical-looking kid. It looked like he'd just stab you to death, this spiky red hair and Steve Vader standing next to him making that face that he always made, and the, you know, Johnny Blitz and Jeff Magnum and those cats, right? I was like, I did not know what they sounded like, but check this out. I remember finding Young, Loud, and Snotty on 8-track tape.
Oh, yeah. And when the Screaming Sirens toured, we had a Sex Pistols 8-track. And we had an old van that had an 8-track player, and I we didn't even know that the fucking Sex Pistols had made an 8-track until we got it at some junk store in like Tucson, Arizona, and then we just we alternated that whole tour between Johnny Cash, The Sound of Music, and the Sex Pistols 8-track.
Wow.
They were all on 8-track, and then finally one of the girls that was driving through, she threw the Sound of Music 8-track out the window because we were playing it so much.
The Sound of Music.
Well, because we used to sing High on the Pills of a Lonely Goat Herd.
Oh my God. But, you know what? This is what, there was this record shop called Record Town. It was in Beaumont, Texas. I still remember. Yeah, you're making me, I haven't thought about this, but it was St. Patrick's Day. It was this little thing they
had. My birthday.
Oh, mine's the 18th, March 18th.
Yay.
So
my Tai Chi's brother.
Yeah, that's right. And if you could find an 8-track, you know, if you, what was it? If you could find the color green on the cover of this 8-track tape, you can get 3 of them for like $5. I remember that. And I got, yeah, I swear to God. And that's how I got Young, Loud, and Snotty. Never mind the Bullocks, here's the Sex Pistols. And, I think it was Rocket to Russia, but there was no green on it, but the guy just kind of let me slide and said, you know, nobody's going to buy it anyway, so. Anyway,
yeah, not in Beaumont.
Yeah, not in Beaumont, man. But anyways, I was just like, holy shit, man. This is, then I'll never forget it. It was like when I first heard, I popped the tape in, Sonic Reducer came on, and it was like, I swear, Pleasant, like a religious experience. Man, goosebumps. I could feel them on my arms, man. And I was just like, I was never going to, I knew this was my music. I knew that I didn't have to bow down to Come On Baby Light My Fire anymore, or, you know, all this other stuff, you know, Slow Ride, Fog Hat, and all this other bullshit, right? I was like, this is it. And then when a friend of mine turned me on to Black Flag, that was 1980. And, you know, right under my nose, my Uncle Gary was the lead singer of the Dicks. And, I never listened to them. Isn't that terrible? Never went to go see them. And, but it was Black Flag, man, Nervous Breakdown. I was like, holy shit, man. And then Six Pack and all that, right?
Yeah, Six Pack.
Yeah, that was just like, holy moly, man. This is it, right? Off to the races we went. But, I was from the South, you know, and I was like, I always hated hanging out with my friend Troy and his buddies over when I went to visit him in California, because as soon as I said I was from Texas, everybody was like, howdy, y'all, and all this stuff. And I can't help them from the South. I'm originally from Louisiana. And, you know, country music and the blues is in my background. And when Jeffrey Lee and Gun Club and all you guys came out, I was like, wow. It still had the energy of punk rock, but it was like the guard was down. Hey, you know, we're gonna, you know, we love the Johnny Cash is just as punk rock as Sid Vicious, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I totally. That's why we used to listen to Johnny Cash all the time, and all that crazy, just crazy fucking shit from the South. Todd Falco from the Panther Burns had all these insane, like, records, and when we go to the swap meet, the record swap meet in the Capitol Records parking lot here in Hollywood, everyone would go there every weekend. And if you got there, you could go straight from a gig, because if you got there at 3 a.m, the people were setting up, and we used to find the wildest records for like a dime or a quarter each, and we would just get them by, like, you know, if it just looked like some guy would be like pumping gasoline in like Arkansas, you know, like if it was some, you know, you could just tell it was like a good weird swampy or rockabilly record on some obscure label that you never heard of, because we used to know all the, you know, old labels. And so we would just buy something like that, and then we'd all go back to my house to Scraysand and just like listen to them one by one, the singles. I'd find some really insane shit, you know, just like the Fant, and also when like the Cramps like covered a lot of that stuff, but we didn't know they were covers, you know, like
yeah, I didn't either. I was the same.
Well, like I'm Cramped by the Cramps was Bust Out by the Busters, and you know, and then when they did Love Me, that was by the Phantom. It was like this wrestler from Memphis that made one record, and then he got paralyzed in some crazy ass wrestling accident or something.
Yeah, I'd heard that.
Or like the legendary Stardust Cowboy. That was the first place we discovered him. And then there was this guy named Omo the Hobo that Mike Mart from Tex and the Horseheads found this record, and it was I'll sing it to you.
Go ahead.
It was like, my girl, she wears furs, minks all day and fox all night. My girl's quite a chick, she knows when she's licked. Kind to animals, she'll do anything for a mink. But Mike used to play that record over and over. It was just some, like, it had a picture. This one had actually, like, on the, it didn't have a sleeve, but it had like a picture pasted on the sleeve. You know, it wasn't like a manufactured sleeve. And it was this guy, Omo the Hobo, standing there like naked, except he had a barrel around him with a cowboy hat on. And we just wore that record out. It was crazy.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because it was that Enigma Variations, man. I wore the, and Hell Comes to Your House too.
Now, yeah.
That was awesome. And I love part one. And you know, Dinah Cancer Mary, she's my co-host sometimes on Stench Radio. And, you know, 45 Grave, yeah, that was another band that really...
Yeah.
That really... And you know, that's the thing that I really loved about the L.A. music scene, is that there were so many powerful women involved.
I know. I was just writing about that. I'm working on some new stuff. I was writing about all the girls. There were so many like awesome women in the LA punk rock scene.
You guys had Los Angeles had, I love Biscuit and the Big Boys. My big bro Tony Offender from the Offenders and all these guys. I miss them all, you know. And that's not a slight in any way against you know my home state Texas. You know, not in any way at all. But Los Angeles, you know, the LA punk scene was dear to me because that was the scene that really pierced, that really grabbed my throat, you know. But that was the first thing I noticed, that there was just so many women. It was like, that were involved, like, you know, the Screaming Sign In with the Tex and the Horseheads. And then, of course, you know, Mary, you know, dying of cancer. She was the first.
Mary woman. And Alice Babb.
Wow.
X-Scene, Diane from the Alley Cats.
You know,
even the Go-Go's were even crazy, you know, like, I mean, they were all like nuts in a good way.
Oh man. You know, I'd heard stories that they were actually when they had, and I love Kathy Valentine, don't get me wrong, but when they had
Margo was in the band.
Yeah, the original bass player, they were more punk rock. A friend of mine played me an old tape of the Mac.
They were totally punk rock. But you know, like the first time they played, they played three songs and two of them were the same song. at the Mask. That was at the Mask.
Dude, I've had Rick Wilder on from the Mau Mau's on the show, I don't know how many times, and I love hearing him tell those old Mask stories, especially like when the Go-Go's had first played there, and he was like, they were a totally different band, man. They weren't what you saw on MTV. You know how Rick talks. I love Rick, man. But he was telling me, like, yeah, they were just this total, they were crazy girls.
Oh, I'll tell you a good crazy Go-Go story. So, you know, me and Belinda lived together for a long time.
No way.
Oh, yeah, she lived at Disgraceland. She was, like, one of the roommates. I'll tell you an early Go-Go story and then a later Go-Go story. Okay, the first one was, we were living in an apartment at West Hollywood that was right down the street from the Whiskey. And we used to go to this Safeway that was near our house with my friend Dennis Crosby, who's also no longer with us. But he was like, we were all like stealing food from stores and stuff, but he was like the master. Like, he could steal like a leg of lamb and five bottles of tequila at once. I'm not kidding.
No.
I mean, He used to put on what he called his Fred and Ethel Mertz coat, and we'd all go in there, and I'd be like, taking small things, but then he would just get like giant things from the butcher section and like really like lots of fifths of booze. And so one night we were with Marty Nation, who wound up in that movie Fingered with Lydia Lunch, you know, and his brother was in 1313 with Lydia Lunch, but at that time Marty was the go-go for Levi and the Rockettes, and Levi was my boyfriend. We hadn't been married yet. So it was me, Marty Nation, Dennis Cosby, Jane, and Margo from the Go-Go's. And we went to the Safeway that we usually hit to get some booze because we didn't have any. And we were all like on Quaaludes, you know, like total. We were already drunk and on Quaaludes. And Marty had his cargo van. So we parked in there, and we all went in there, and Margo had, like, pink hair, which at that point in time, this was probably, like, 78, you know, like, nobody had pink hair in regular life, you know, so it's not like we were inconspicuous, and we were all fucked up. And so we were doing our normal thing. Dennis got, like, a ton of bottles of vodka, and, you know, everyone was doing it, and then Margo was supposed, because she was too drunk and fucked up on pills, we didn't want her to steal anything, so she was going to be the decoy that bought, like, you know, a bottle of ketchup or something while everyone else walked outside. So she did, and then she left her purse there because she was so wasted. And Then she got in the van and realized she lost her purse, and we all had, like, tons of booze and stuff. And she's like, I have to go back in. And she's like, my ID's in there. And we're like, don't go in. Come and just get it tomorrow. Like, dress different and get it tomorrow, you know, because it was, like, already, like, you know, it was after midnight. And she's like, no. And so she went in there to get the purse, and then she like, just snatched it off the checkout counter, and then... like one of the baggers, you know, the bagging grocery baggers, like started running after her. And then she dropped her purse in the parking lot. She kind of like tripped and dropped her purse. So she was trying to pick up like all this lipstick and stuff that was in her purse, and he caught her. So we just drove off. And because there was people running after the car when Marty was trying to pull out. And he was driving across the medians on Santa Monica Boulevard, like across the grass parts in the middle of the street. Like, he just drove like a nut, and he didn't have his headlights on. And then we pulled into the parking garage of our apartment, and we all ran upstairs and turned the lights out. And then, you know, no cops came or anything, so after a while we turned the lights on again. And then we started calling the West Hollywood jail to find Margot, and by that time, me and Jane and Dennis Cosby had taken more Quaaludes. And Jane and I, like, sort of passed out on the couch, and Dennis was trying to cook something, and he passed out in the middle of it. So we woke up because all this water had boiled out of an onion, and the smoke alarms were going off, and the onion had exploded and stuff. So then, and then me and Jane were like, well, we're going to get Margo out of jail because, you know, they usually let people jail out around 6 a.m. and it was like, you know, 6:30 in the morning. And so then it took us a really long time to figure out where Jane had parked her car because neither one of us remembered. And then she couldn't drive. She couldn't see. So I had to sit on her lap, and I was seeing, and she, and her legs were doing the gas pedals, and we went and got Margo out of jail. Margo was horrified because she was like, there was all these like hookers in the jail, and she was the only person that wasn't a hooker, you know. And then she was crying and screaming the whole night. And at first they're like, "Oh, it's okay, baby, it's okay." And then after about 2 hours, she said they're going, "Fuck off, you cunt." Telling her to shut up. So they let her out of the jail, and we got her out. But, man, that was nuts. I mean, that was like, I didn't even know how many laws we broke in one night that night. And then the second go-go story I'll tell you is when Belinda was living with me at Disgraceland, which was like L.A.'s most notorious punk rock crash pad from 78 to 88. We lasted in there. And my landlord was Mickey Hargitay, that used to be married to Jane Mansfield. I mean, that place was fucking nuts. That was crazy. You can still hear me, right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. I was just making sure, because my house has little dead spots in it sometimes for phone reception. Anyway, so when we were living at Disgraceland, there was this family upstairs, and they had two teenage daughters, and they used to just play like Donna Summer singles with the arm across, so they would repeat over and over. And so we couldn't handle it. So we would just like blast the Cramps or something, you know, like Iggy or the Cramps, and just like put the speakers up in the window. And then they'd like throw down like, you know, like old food and you know, dirty Pampers and stuff. I mean, we never got along with our neighbors. But then Belinda was living there when Our Lips Are Sealed went to number one. And, so then all of a sudden the girls upstairs just were playing Our Lips Are Sealed nonstop, like the same way that they used to play Donna Summer. And Belinda was laying on the bed, like just screaming with a pillow over her head going, make it stop. I can't handle this. This is insane. You know, and that our Disgraceland was so slummy. It was a little like slum apartment, you know? And so I was like sitting there trying to explain to her that those girls, if they knew that the singer of that song lived downstairs, they would never believe it in a million years. And then our other roommate was like, well, maybe you should go up, you know, maybe you should go up yourself and tell them to stop. And then Belinda was like, stop it, shut up. And then we're like, well, no, maybe you should go up in a towel and some cold cream on your face and tell them to stop. So she'd look like the cover of the Go-Go's record, and then they'd really know it was her.
Wow. It's weird to hear. I mean, you know, because I was one of those kids that was living in Texas, and every time you turned MTV on, there they were, you know?
Yeah.
So hearing you tell this story, and, you know, I've heard other people talk about Disgrace Land and what a wild place it was to live and that sort of thing. But, oh, gosh, who was telling me a story about it?
Was it someone from Poison 13?
Oh, God. I'm trying. You know, if I had a more clear mind at the moment, I'm trying to get my second wind here. I've been on since 7 p.m. and I still have the radio. I'm going blank right now, Pleasant. It wasn't nobody from Poison 13. Although, I was really bumming out because I really wanted to see Poison 13. And I just happened to go to this record shop on the drag here in Austin, and they were having some bands play out back, and who was playing back there? Poison 13. I was like, yes! It was like the clouds just opened and rained just favor upon me. But anyways, that was the one and only time I ever saw them.
Oh my God, we toured with them a lot. We saw them play when they came to Al's Bar, and then we thought they were like the best thing on earth, and then we were like talking, and then they're like, you should come to Texas. So we were in the middle of booking a tour, so that we wound up like staying at their house, and then we did lots of dates with them all over the place, and then their van broke down, so it was like all of Poison 13 and all of the Scream and Sirens in our van. And then they came out. At one point they came out and they had a different van. They had this old, like, it was like an old cleaner's van, like an old step van. And their van broke down in our driveway, and it wouldn't start. So they lived with us for like 3 weeks out here. That was fun. That was crazy. One night we got all the mattresses in the house and put them on the floor in the living room, and we were drinking Everclear and diving off the mantelpiece of the fireplace.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So hey, listen, real quick, though, before I forget, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is that you were mentioning that you were on a panel and or you're going to go to, I forget, universities and do
UCLA.
And Jack Grisham, who's a good friend of mine, and Keith Morris, and all those guys, I've had them on the show before. But, you know, Jack is a, man, he's just an awesome guy. But anyway, I want to hear about this, and so does everybody else. This is really cool.
Well, Jack and Keith Morris and Paul Rossler from the Screamers and I are all going to be at UCLA this Tuesday speaking to a class on punk rock. And there's like 95 people in the class. And so we're going to just be, it's this the girl that's teaching it, I'm not sure if she's a professor or if she's like, you know, like doing a fellow or something, you know, but she started this class and it's on California punk rock. And so she got the panel together. So we're all going there from 11 to 1 on Tuesday to talk to a college class. So that's going to be really good. And I think it's getting taped. And Gary Leonard, you know, that famous LA photographer, is coming to document it. So that's going to be really a great thing. It's going to be fun.
Oh, so do you have any idea what you're going to talk about yet, or?
No, but I'm sure that, like, between Jack and I, neither of us are going to be able to shut up. But, no, I don't know. She hasn't sent questions over, but I'm sure anything she says, we're all going to be talking, you know?
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't know, but I mean, anything that they could possibly ask, all of us are going to have a lot of stories.
Well, I tell you, I've wanted you on the show for a while because I was always told, man, Pleasant is one of those gals, man. She's got tons of cool stories to tell.
And yeah, do you have a copy of my book? I should send you a copy of my book.
No, I don't. No, I didn't even know you had a book out.
Oh, my God. I've got like 8 of them. The last one that just came out is called Showgirl Confidential, and it's on Punk Hostage Press, and it's got all sorts of insane, like, rock and roll touring stories, and then it's got, like, crazy. It's all about, that book is all road stories, going from punk rock to the Arab Spring. Like, you know, it's got crazy stuff of when I was in Cairo during the Arab Spring, and other times I've been in Egypt, and then just crazy burlesque shows, so it's, because, you know, that's mostly what I've been doing for the past 20 years, has been being a dancer, but I'm still on tour all the time. I'm, like, never in L.A. But, yeah, send me your address on Facebook, and I'll send you a copy. And then anyone that's listening, you guys can get a copy from PleasantGaiman.com, and I'll sign it to you, or you can get it on Amazon.
Okay, y'all hear that? PleasantGaiman.com, and I'll put the link in the chat room. And but Pleasant, man, I tell you, I really have had. I want to have you back on when we can, you know, sit and talk longer. And
I would like to too, but I don't want to bum you out by saying I need to sleep because I know you're up for 24 hours. But
no,
I've got a really early class in the morning. I have to teach.
Oh, I know. But I got to tell you this, though, before you get off the phone, man. But, you know, back in the day, I hate saying that. God, I hate that term. But
I always my boyfriend tells me, I never say back in the day. I always say in punk rock. And he says, you say it as though you're saying in the Middle Ages or in Africa. like it's a different country or its own planet.
Well, you know, I just wanted to say this, and I'm certainly somebody who really appreciates health. I really, you know, now I'm going to be 48 in this coming March 18th, and you know, I'm really, you know, health is just so valuable, and you know, we really, man, you know, I could tell, you know, back in those Scream days, I mean, I used to do, oh my God, just so much speed and alcohol and
totally.
God. And you know, just that whole era, you know, and but you know, when I say the Screaming, you know, all of you guys, but you especially, you girls were just so talented and just so adorable. But I gotta tell you that, you know, and please take this with, you know, all due respect, you look absolutely amazing. I mean, you have kept your, I mean, you look like a kid still. I mean, really do. And maybe it's because of the belly dancing and all that, because it is strenuous, I've heard. And I've been getting into this Diamond Dallas Page yoga, and it kicks your ass. It does. And, you know, I'm just trying, you look great, and you look like you feel great, and it's just really inspiring, and it, you know, makes people like me just like want to go, shit, you know, I really, and I'm a single dad with a little girl, a little 6-year-old girl, and, you know, I'm raising her by myself, and it's the greatest thing in the world to me, and I want to be around for a long time, and, you know, I want to rock. I don't want to be a sick old man, you know, and, you know, it's, you know, I've had John Joseph from the Cro-Mags on. He's in his 50s, and the guy runs, he looks like a kid, and he runs, like, Ironman competitions, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to be 56 on March 17th.
Shut up.
No, I'm totally serious.
You look phenomenal. You look better than women more than half your age. I mean that. I'm not just trying to be charming. I really mean that. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. You know, that to me is like, holy crap, I got to get my shit together, man. You know, seriously. No, all jokes aside, seriously. You know, that's,
drink lots of water. That's my secret is I drink a lot of water, and I didn't see the sun for like 25 years, so I don't have any sun damage.
Well, I'll tell you, it may be so, but, you know, that just, man, that's just awesome. That really is. Well, listen, Pleasant, you know, go get your beauty rest, no pun intended. And listen, I've got your I'll text you, and let's plan to have you on when we can like talk longer and it's earlier and that's, you know, you're the
first. Yeah, let's do another one soon. That would be fun.
Yeah, I love that. Man, I could just, I'm digging this, you know, because I love talking and, you know, and of course, anything with, you know, L.A. music and Jeffrey Lee Pierce, I could talk for days, you know. But listen, thank you so much. And before you leave, you could do me a monstrous favor. Just say your name and what band you were in or whatever, and you're listening to StenchRadio.com.
Okay. This is Pleasant Gaiman from the Screaming Sirens, the Ringling Sisters, and Honk If You're Horny, and you are listening to StenchRadio.com. Mwah!
That's awesome. Hey, honey, thank you so much. And really, I do appreciate your time. I really do. Thank you so much.
This was awesome. Thank you. And goodbye, everyone.
Well, you know what? And I'm not going to tell you goodbye. We're going to say we're going to see you soon, real soon.
Well, I know. I'll turn on the radio when I'm driving to my dance class tomorrow, and I know you're still going to be awake.
Oh, man, I'm going to be hating life. Hey, if you want to hop back on later on tomorrow, man, and help me stay awake, that'd be awesome.
All right, maybe I will.
Well, listen, you take care, and thank you so much, Pleasant. Really, I appreciate it.
Okay, have a good night.
Night-night.
Bye.